Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, at the Luke Rogers on Twitter. You can follow me at Braden Gall, 615-737-1025. If you want to get in, we'll have plenty of time for your calls this hour. Wide open for you guys, because I'd like to know where you guys place the blame. Titans lose yesterday 12-7 on the road against the Arizona Cardinals. They fall to 8-5. Jacksonville wins yesterday, moves to 9-4, now first place in the division, all by their lonesome, and the Titans fall to second place. You look around the AFC, the Carson City, Los Angeles, formerly known as San Diego Chargers, 7-6. Kansas City now 7-6. Buffalo 7-6. Baltimore 7-6. All vying for wild card spots and all one game behind the Tennessee Titans. The Titans, of course, will play at San Francisco, host the LA Rams, and host the Jacksonville Jaguars with three games left to go in the regular season. So sort of all bets are off in the AFC wildcard race. It does look like the divisional title will be a very difficult thing to attain. They're going to have to win both games, San Francisco and the LA Rams, to guarantee themselves an opportunity to climb back into a tie with Jacksonville, in which case they would have the tiebreaker. 615-737-1025. I'd like to know where people fall on who to be blamed for this. I give the majority of the blame for the season lack of development for Marcus Mariota, the coaching staff, but it's hard to argue that this team and this coaching staff hasn't been pretty good at getting this whole thing to an 8-5 situation, which is still an improvement from last year. Is this Al in Nashville? Is that Al? Al, welcome to the show. What's going on, man?
Hi, good morning, guys. You know, the biggest thing, I do agree with you, the biggest thing that I see different between today and last year is that the playbook, they used a lot more of the playbook than they're doing right now. They've limited the offensive number of plays. Okay, if what's happening here, Delanie Walker seems to be the only receiver, that Trubisky now has any confidence in. Okay, this doesn't make it very hard for a defense to scheme against it. They got to open up the game. That's the difference between today and last year.
Well, I would agree with that, Al. I think it's pretty apparent that Marcus really, really trusts Delanie Walker, and after that, it's.
I mean, he throws crazy difficult throws to Delanie
Walker. He really pushes it into him, right. and that could also, that is probably a reflection of his confidence right now in himself and also in this offense, is the fact that he's not spreading the ball around like he really could or should. And I put, I put half of that on the play card. We talked the percentage wise, 50% of that's going on Trubisky for me, and the other bit of it's varied. But Marcus gets tunnel vision sometimes, and I think it becomes Delanie or no one.
How much? And I guess we wouldn't. If every play is being called by Terry Trubisky, then sure, you have to point to the offensive the coordinator. But, I mean, the head coach here with Mularkey, I mean, it's going to be the identity that he wants.
Yeah.
So, are we just saying, hey, it's all Trubisky here? Because, I mean, listen, when people get upset with football coaches, underachieve, whatever, a couple years in a row, what happens? Everybody calls for the coach's head, the coach fires the coordinator, and then he comes back. We are not even close to being in that situation. But it's sort of a standard MO for coaching is that, the offense is a little stagnant, the defense is not as good, we'll fire the coordinators.
Right, it's not going to fall on the head coach's head,
right.
Rarely.
If that next collection of coordinators doesn't work, then yes, it falls to the head coach. But this exotic smash mouth thing came from him right away.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was his introductory press conference, but basically he used the word exotic smash mouth, and that's why everybody loves that phrase. Or not loves it, but loves using that phrase because he's the one who kind of coined it and said, this is what we're going to be. And he is a little bit old school, which I love when he's honest in a press conference, but sometimes stubborn when it comes to play calling. How much does Mularkey get on this as far as like, hey, I'm going to will my team into this certain identity, and maybe that's not really the direction that the personnel should go?
See, I wonder if the situation were different. So stick with me for a second here. I wonder if it was, say, Andy Reid in Kansas City, who often sputters, struggles, and what does he do? He gives up the play calling duties because he's the head coach calling plays. So, scenario outside of this: right. If Mike Mularkey is your play caller, which he's not at this point, do you think there would be a call for him to give up play calling duties because the offensive struggles?
If Mularkey was calling the plays for this team 13 games in, 100%.
See, then that's my
and
point.
And it probably
then.
Would have happened earlier. That it probably my point would have happened
then,
3 weeks ago.
And my point then is that it most likely is on Rybicki then. And yes, Mike is the captain of the ship. He's steering this whole thing. And so he does deserve a fair amount of criticism because at the end of the day, he's got his headset on and he hears the play calls and he most likely has the final say. But like I said, if he's the play caller, he's probably given it up at this point because the offense has been so bad, which means, yes, things fall on coordinators and I think unduly sometime. However, at this point, like, something has to change, and you're not going to change the quarterback. You're not going to play Matt Cassel, which means that you've got to change what you're doing offensively, how you scheme, how you game plan, and that's got to happen. Otherwise, I think this is a real, real critical week because if you lose again, there's a real possibility that, you know, that you end up with either a very bad position in the playoffs or you might miss it altogether if you can't turn it around.
I mean, I think 8-8 is in the realm of possibility. It's hard to see that, but Jimmy Garoppolo went for like 334 yesterday or something like that. Garoppolo is now 2-0 and
Jimmy G. Yeah.
So
if they go 8-8, they're done. Just looking at these other wild card teams' schedules, no one's finishing 9-7, like below 9-7, making the playoffs in AFC. As bad as it's been.
Well, but one team can finish 9-7 ahead of them. There's just so many. It's almost impossible to go through all the scenarios. I mean, it's so funny. We could say, man, this team is on the verge of 8-8 and is on the verge of losing four straight to finish the season. Is on the verge of all this just utter collapse and calamity. We could also say if they win one game that they're
probably in
a situation to either make a wild card or be in a position to beat Jacksonville or have the Jacksonville game at home mean something for the division.
Right.
Now, Jacksonville's got Houston and at San Francisco. So if they lose one of those two games and you lose to the Rams, you're still playing for the division title in week 17. So we are literally quarters away from winning, you know, playing for the division title or quarters away from missing the playoffs altogether.
And that Rams game is scary because as bad as the offense was this week and just sort of inconsistent and sputtering they've been the last month, you're coming in against one of the top scoring team in the league, and your defense has played well, and that's been the biggest surprise. If we're talking about positives out of, you know, this last...
I was going to say, we have to say something positive
at
some point.
This last game, especially 8 sacks, they did a great job getting to the passer, and this was supposed to be a bend-but-don't-break sort of defense that just sort of held on long enough because you were supposed to be controlling the clock and controlling the tempo by running the football as a Titans offense, and that just hasn't been the case, and the defense has actually played more than well enough for this team to win. So this schedule is, especially with the Rams, they got to figure something out this week on offense and come out and look like a different team because it's not going to cut it against the Los Angeles Rams that put up close to 30 points a game. You know, and you come out against the Cardinals, the 6-7 Cardinals now, and get a lone touchdown in the entire game.
The Cardinals got sacked 8 times. The Cardinals were 3 of 14 on third down, which is awful.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals didn't score a touchdown. So those three numbers alone, 8 sacks, no touchdowns, awful on third downs. You should win that football game.
Oh,
every single time.
Yeah, you really should. And that's why those turnovers are so costly for Marcus. The drops are costly. But again, I mean, if you want to predicate your team on its identity that you've established as head coach Mike Mularkey, which is smash mouth football, you got to do better than running the ball 19, 20 times a game. Now you've lost your identity completely. And then, I mean, I think that's in some ways very unfair to Marcus Mariota, and I'm not going to defend him completely because he played poorly, and he has played poorly down the stretch. You don't turn the ball over 14 times in interceptions and not have a share of the blame. But this offense was supposed to be built as a run-first, downhill, road-grading offensive line with two running backs I think that are very, very good in tandem, and they're not using them. They're not playing the way they're supposed to play.
Is that just so – listen, I'm old school when it comes to the football that I love. I love running the football and playing defense. I love that just from a, you know, a fan standpoint. But because it was effective last year and people saw it for a whole year, is it just the NFL has just sort of moved past that style of offense and it's so easy to stop? Well, am I just making that up?
I don't think that's the case, because if there's one constant in football, it's that you win if you can run the ball. And running the football, for the most part, ends up being, you know, one-on-one, offensive line versus defensive line. And then if they stack the box, then you should be able to throw it. But I don't. They're not seeing stacked boxes. It's just they're getting away from what their identity and who they built themselves to be. And look, I understand if you're going to throw the ball, you know, two to one ratio, if you're playing from behind the entire game. But that wasn't the case against the Cardinals. They were up most of the game.
Right.
So I don't have a lot of excuses except that they got away from scheming and calling the game the way they should have. And if it wasn't working, you know, you got to call different plays. And if those don't work, then you got to start keeping the defense off balance, throw in a screen play, run a bubble screen, you know, start running slants. You can have a short passing game be your running game, but they weren't doing right. that either. They're pushing the ball down the field in coverages, double coverage, places that you're low percentage plays and low percentage passes.
You look at the defense of the Titans, we talk about how well they played. They did give up 136 yards rushing yesterday to Arizona, which was a little odd, considering they were down to like their 11th starting running back. But really, it's about the comparison. I mean, you have 29 carries for Arizona, 136 yards rushing. The Titans go 22 carries for 65 yards, 19 carries for DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry total, 21 total touches. DeMarco caught a couple of passes yesterday. Now, he did have the one really big long run that I actually think, strangely enough, changes the game so much, because I don't really like to look at one play as any one defining play. I mean, outside of a major turnover on the final possession or something that's just like so dramatically important at the end of the game, I don't like normally to use one play and define a game. But, you know, they were playing well, they were up, and they get that run from DeMarco Murray. It's a long run that puts them way into Arizona territory. And they kind of call a really cheap sort of outside of the play holding call on Jack Conklin. The whole thing comes all the way back, and the whole drive stops after that. So, I mean, there were... Even on the one long successful run, called back from holding, and it really had nothing to do with the play. It was like a backside, you know, left tackle down the field making a block on a linebacker, and you're just going, had nothing to do with the play.
Right, and it's a drive, and that's a killer, especially when you can't get any rhythm on offense, and that's where they were. And it's just something's got to change. And it hasn't. And I was hoping that we'd see a difference between last week and this week, and you know, a little bit, you know, a different look. And this could come down, I mean, we talked about coaching. We talked about the last segment. This could really come down to Titans aren't doing a great job self-scouting. If you keep bringing out the same product, the same ideas, the same week in and week out, and it's not working.
So you said something has to change. I want to get your thoughts on what that needs to be. And if you need to vent, Titans fans, we understand, Nashville. 615-737-1025. What is it that you want to see changed? We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, what needs to change for the Tennessee Titans? We'll get to that in a second, but I want to remind you, everybody, to make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii, brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Sign up and pick now at thegamenashville.com. No, Luke, you can't take me.
Well, okay.
Sorry.
Well, I'm glad you cut that off, because now I won't invite you.
It's fine. I just told you. I preempted your non-invitation by telling you that you couldn't invite me.
Okay. Well, I mean, take you off the list. Take you off the list completely.
Yeah, completely.
Okay. Well, I like knowing where you stand with this, Braden, so thank you.
Although JC Jack Daddy on Twitter says, I don't get a vote, but really enjoy talking to me. You working with the smooth, silky sounds of the Luke Rogers.
JC Jack Daddy, I appreciate that.
Also on Twitter, Ernad says, I feel like defenses can load the box against the Titans to stop the run because they aren't scared of Mariota beating them. Also, where the hell was Derrick Henry in the second half yesterday?
That's on the bench. He was on the bench.
That's another big question. Again, 19 total carries between the two of them, DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. Marcus Mariota now in his last four games, 3 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, less than 200 yards per game. 615-737-1025. What do you want to see changed? What do you want to see different about this team? And if you want to vent, we're here for you. But Luke, we were talking to going into break about something. You said the phrase, something's got to change. And we've thrown out a lot of ideas this morning in the first hour and 20 minutes of the show. Is there one that you can pinpoint that you want to see going into a San Francisco game that now has what appears to be a resurgent offense with Jimmy Garoppolo running the offense now? 293 yards passing 2 weeks ago, 334 yards passing this past week, and 2-0.
Jimmy
what
G.
needs to change?
Jimmy G airing it out. Listen, we've covered this, and I think in a couple of the first segments. If it was up to me, the very first thing I would do is I would implement and I would work in the no huddle. And I don't care. I'm saying come out. I think it's not a bad idea, to be completely honest, to come out first drive and go no huddle and press that defense.
Yeah.
And then you got to find your identity. You can't pretend to be one thing one week and then pretend to be another thing another week. So you got to commit to this running game and run into the ground, or you've got to commit to being this passing team. But then you've got to help Marcus out. Like you've got to. So my 1A is run some no huddle, get him in the spread, get him in rhythm. My 1B is please give me 3, 4, 5 screen plays during the game, especially if the offensive line is struggling against pressure. Give me the screen play. And the third thing I think in that list would be 1B would be tell me what your identity is and stick with that. If you're really going to be this smash mouth, exotic smash mouth, and I hate that. I mean, I'm so sick of this term. But if that's who you're going to be that. And don't run the ball 19 times in the game and throw the ball 31 and tell me that you are a run first, ball control, bend but not break defense when you don't look like that on the field.
I have yet to dive into the San Francisco 49ers defensive statistics because I didn't think I was going to have to do that. But I'm going to have to do that now to find out where they're, you know, like it's, they were 1-10 2 weeks ago. I shouldn't have to dive into their statistical information. I should just say Titans go in the game.
Right, just shouldn't stupid. Be circled on the calendar.
Is this Josh in Nashville? Josh, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, fellas. I think it was James Lofton on the broadcast yesterday. He talked about how Mariota throws flat-footed a lot. And I want you guys to talk about his mechanics and how he has regressed and the way that he throws. You rarely see him step into his throws. It's almost like even in the shotgun, and that's what James Lofton was saying, he's a snap thrower. So sometimes the throws fall short, and I think that's one big problem with him. And I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it. We've talked a little bit about this. The back foot thing has been an issue for him for a while. But I think a lot of that's him feeling pressure and not feeling confident in his pocket.
And not stepping up.
Not
stepping up in the pocket.
But is there a part, and this is where we can talk about the percentage that's Marcus Mariota's fault, in that he's always just going to be an arm thrower, meaning he's not a five-step plant back foot, transfer weight, follow through. I mean, that's just never he's a mobile guy. So when he moves around, you're sort of thrown from different arm angles and different weird slots and different body positions and all this other stuff. I don't know if he's ever going to be a true drop back Tom Brady-ish style of sort of throwing motion, but there has to be some semblance of consistency if you want to step into a throw and actually consistently complete passes down the field.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like when you're on the run, when you're outside the pocket, when you're making plays, you don't set your feet. And, you know, the great sort of playmaking quarterbacks in our league, they don't have to get their feet set. However, though, you will see that these guys in the pocket, for the most part, there are some big exceptions to this, but these guys will step into their throws. And I think part of this, and I mean, this could be completely like a mental thing from Marcus, but I feel like part of it is he doesn't trust that offensive line. He doesn't feel the pressure. He doesn't really slide up in the pocket. And that's maybe my biggest critique on Marcus is that he looks like a rookie sometimes. In the
that
way
would be the knee, ankle, leg thing. I mean, he's had a knee injury in college, broken leg in the NFL, hamstring issue.
Well, I mean, if you
you're a little nervous about that, isn't that the worst place? I mean, that's you have to have sort of the stones to take that first big step up into the pocket.
And look at if you watched the Eagles at all yesterday with Carson Wentz, who's in his second year. I think that Carson does so well is he's mobile like Marcus is, but he really has good feel in the pocket. He'll step up, he'll slide up, and he'll hold that ball until he's ready to throw, and sometimes longer than you know that clock in your head is going to say. But he moves well with his eyes downfield, and I don't think Marcus is there yet, and that is a little concerning in year three. But I'm with you. I think part of it, I think there's this mental thing for Marcus. I think part of it has to be the injury. Part of it's not trusting his offensive line.
Not trusting his receivers
and
either.
Not trusting his receivers. And so you've got a lot of things to work with. And we talked about it in shows past, Braden, when we sat here. And I really am going to go back to this. I really feel like the fact that he got hurt last year and missed all of the offseason as far as craft development as a quarterback and instead was rehabbing, I think we're seeing some of that this year because he just didn't have a full offseason of working on his footwork and working on the things he needs to do from a skill standpoint and even maybe a mechanics standpoint to make himself a better quarterback. And instead he was working on getting his leg healthy.
Well, and what's really interesting is as we talk about how sort of like we don't really trust anything now, right? Like we don't trust Marcus. We don't trust the coordinator. We don't trust the play calling. We don't trust the receiving core. We don't trust the offensive line. By the way, I did quickly check San Francisco's the 25th rated rush defense in the NFL. So
run the ball.
Whether Jimmy Garoppolo throws for three bills or not next year or next weekend, doesn't like you still should be able to run the football on a really bad 3-10 San Francisco 49er defense. So now that I've delved deep into the San Francisco 49er defensive statistics, I just there's not a lot of trust for anything. And what it does is it unfortunately it justifies the people, and I don't know if I would call myself one of those people, but. Because in the NFL, it's not like college, where college is a beauty contest. In college, you need to impress a committee. In college, you need to margin of victory matters.
Yeah, impressive
like,
wins.
You have to be dominant to sort of win your way into the playoff or be in the conversation or whatever. In the NFL, it's not. You could win by 1 point every single week and win a championship.
Sure.
So there's part of me that's been torn about this issue with this Titans team all season, where they haven't looked good at all, but they keep finding ways to win. You're like, well, maybe that just makes them a good, gritty, clutch team. And yesterday, they do all the same stuff, but they fall flat on their face and they get beat. And you go, it's all the stuff we were worried about. All the stuff we thought was there but didn't hurt them in the past. Well, it got them. And let's be honest, Arizona, everybody wants to rip on Arizona. I will be the one person that says I think Arizona is a better football team than people think. I'm not saying Blaine Gabbert's any good, but they're 6-7 in a division with two of the best teams in the NFL.
Right.
In an NFC that's much more difficult than the six, like the 7-6 Buffalo Bills and the 7-6 Baltimore Ravens aren't as good as that football team.
No.
That
no,
they just played.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, I think you got to go back a little bit and look at what they did last season. When Marcus got hot, and maybe return to some of that stuff as far as play calling, as far as scheme, as far as building that offense. And look, you made a really good point. I want to get back to this is what I was going to say is after last week, you know, you get an ugly win. Everybody's okay with an ugly. It's a win. It might be ugly, but a win's right. A win. Well, you played.
I'd rather win ugly every time.
Well, you played the same way, and you lose this week, and now we'll address those problems. That to me might be the issue. Is like, how long can you win ugly before all the mistakes you make that make that ugly win ugly is catch up and you lose? And that's what happened this week.
Yep. And when they have – listen, early in the season, they played up to competition. They played very well against Seattle, played up to competition, played well against – I wouldn't call playing up to Oakland good, but, I mean, they got beat, but they played well in that game.
Well,
and
was,
everyone thought Oakland was a great team at that point. They played up to Jacksonville, no question. They went on the road and had a chip on their shoulder because of what happened last year in week 16 against Jacksonville and the broken leg and all that stuff. But I think they've played down to competition ever since then. And then they played Pittsburgh, couldn't even come close to playing up to competition there. And now you're playing down to everybody else you've played. So the amount of faith I had in this team making the playoffs was, you know, it was at 90% entering this past weekend. The faith I have of this team making the playoffs now, I still think they make the playoffs, but you're telling me that like a 3-10 San Francisco team is now scary to me.
Yeah.
And that's a bad, bad thing.
And I think when you see so much flux and variation in a team and how they play, you know, in any given week, they play up, they play down. You're talking about a team that doesn't have an identity, because if they knew who they were as an offense and a defense, I think you'd see a lot more consistency. And again, we've been hammering this, but I think that again, that falls on the coach and the coaching staff, and whether it's play calling, on the offensive side, or whether it's Mike Mularkey, everyone owns a piece of that. And if you don't know your identity as a football team, you're going to end up playing down to teams you're supposed to beat, and you're going to end up sometimes playing up and sometimes falling flat, like on Thursday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, and let's be very clear about their stretch here, where they went, 6-2 now? They were 6-1 in their last seven. It was against Tom Savage. It was against Jacoby Brissett. It was against, Andy Dalton was the starting quarterback. Okay. Joe Flacco was a starting quarterback, sort of. Okay. But then you played the Browns and you played Jacoby Brissett before that. So even Blaine Gabbert beat you. So the defense has been great. That's the one positive we can say about this team. Defense has been great, 13 points a game, whatever you want to say. They're not particularly doing it against great players.
No, they're not.
They play Big Ben and Deshaun Watson and they get lit up for 90 points, almost 100 points.
That is concerning. So, yeah, I mean, you...
Like, they're stopping people, but who are they stopping?
They're not stopping great quarterbacks.
No, they're not. You said play calling. I want to. There is one play call that I want to get to. Highly questionable. Highly questionable play call. I want to get to that when we come back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, Fitz here. You know how crazy life is for me right now. I'm splitting time between two cities. What's keeping me sane? Xfinity. That's right. Sonny and I don't have to worry about any binge-watching cheating going on, because Xfinity X1 puts it all right there for me where I can get to it on demand. I keep telling you, there's over 18 million hotspots all over the country you can get to. But the best part is that all of my on-demand stuff from home is there no matter where I am. So if I'm up at ESPN in Bristol, if I'm home anywhere I want to go, I can get to our favorite shows. And the best part is I can set recordings from there. I can delete things from there just to make Sonny mad. We can do all of the same things from the mobile site that we can do from the Xfinity X1 box. It's all there as part of the incredible package. I've been telling you constantly, you need to make the switch, and what you need to do is bundle it all together. It will save you money. Got an offer that you got to check out. It expires on New Year's Eve, 12/31/17. Obviously, restrictions apply, not available in all areas. What you need to do, get started with Xfinity Internet and TV for $25 each a month for 12 months when you bundle both. Just call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com today. Again, 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com today for more details.
Luke Rogers, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yes, Braden.
So we're going to actually we'll talk about like other stories in sports in just a second, because there was other things that happened in this world.
Wait, more than just the Titans
play? Well, we got to take a break from all this negativity. But I want one more big chunk of negativity. Is that cool? Can we do one more big chunk of
Absolutely.
Negativity? Then we'll get back to the negativity coming up next hour. All right, let me ask you a question. I tell you what. Let's let Mike Mularkey explain this to us first, because there was a 4th-and-1 in particular that stands out. The Titans lined up to punt. They did not punt. They got the first down because they handed the ball to Eric Weems, of course. Then it was challenged by Bruce Arians and the Cardinals, overturned, and gave the ball to the Cardinals. I believe at like the 35-yard line, the Cardinals eventually kick a field goal in that possession. Mike Mularkey commenting about that play after the game.
It's disappointing. Probably got a little over-aggressive trying to with the punt fake and that call down there to Richard on the post where they picked it. You know, they made more plays than we did. Can't turn the ball over like we did and not get any. So, tough loss. Tough loss for us. Defense played out of their mind for the whole game. I mean, the whole game. Had a chance to win the game because of our defense the whole game. And then special teams wasn't good enough, and neither was offense. You know what? We should have got it. I thought we had it. Both officials had the mark as a first down. I was standing right behind them. I don't know how it got overturned, especially when most of those times that play with all the bodies, I don't know how they saw that. I still don't. I question that immensely, that overturn.
Immensely, he questions. He doesn't just question it, Luke. He questions it immensely. So I got a couple of questions for you. First of all, do you think he got the first down?
Oh, it's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know how you overturn it.
Exactly, because usually they stick with the call on the field if there's not conclusive, you know, and very, very, very definitive video evidence. That's supposed to be the default for referees, and so that is unfortunate. I mean, the Titans have kept the Arizona Cardinals offense out of the end zone the whole game on Sunday, which in a lot of ways, flipping the field then with a punt seems to be a lot better option when you're ahead and you're on the wrong side of the 50 there. And I mean, if it works, great. If it doesn't, then you're in this position and you get it. You put your defense in a very short field. And of course, one play does not win or lose a game necessarily for you, but this just was a weird turning point for this game with giving the Arizona Cardinals the ball on their side of the field inside the 40-yard line.
I really can make the case, which is really dangerous. I can really make the case in my own head, both sides on everything. Like, okay, timing of the game. You're up 7-3. About 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. Your defense has played dominant football. Of course you punt. Like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But also, your offense has done absolutely nothing. And if you can get 1 yard, which it appeared that they did,
right,
in a situation where nobody expects you to do it, right? Like, this is one of those where, like, this isn't the right situation to do this. Well, that's why you run it in that situation, because no one's expecting you to do it. Could we change the play call maybe a little bit, have a different player in there instead of Eric Queen? I don't know what the right decision would be there. So I get what he's trying to do, catch somebody off guard in a very unusual situation in the game. And your offense hasn't been doing much. Give them another chance to keep the ball. I get all that. I can make that case. I did think he got it. I thought it was a first down, and I thought it was silly that they overturned it. I didn't think that you had enough conclusive evidence to overturn the call on the field. And the defense did the job in theory. They got the stop, held them to a field goal. You still had the lead 7-6. It was the very next play, though, however, when you throw the interception. Yeah. And that's the problem, is the interception to me was still bigger than the fake punt. So, and to your point, I never, ever like to look at one play, because even after that fake punt, right, that doesn't go well, the Titans have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 possessions. And all they needed was either a field goal or a touchdown on half of those.
And that doesn't matter. All you needed was one score. Yeah.
One score is all you needed, and you had 5 drives after that, and you couldn't get anything done. So it's like, part of me is like, man, that's a stupid call. It makes no sense. But on the same token, I can't say that one play call decides
it didn't
the end of a game.
I mean, if you execute on any of those 5 drives, we don't talk about the fake punt except for like it's an aside.
Yeah,
like it wasn't a great decision, but it didn't cost them anything really.
And the defense thing, you could argue, we punted the ball back to them and we wanted to give them a long field because our defense is playing so well. You could also, the argument works on the flip side.
Right.
Well, our defense is playing so well that we knew we could hold them to a field goal, and they did, and they still had the lead.
So yeah, it's one of those things you scratch your head. I don't hate the call. I mean, hindsight's always. I love gambling.
Normally.
Hindsight's always 20/20. So if it works, we don't talk about it, right? And it's a great call by Mike Mularkey. So
he's genius.
Right, it's always 20/20. And you know, when your offense is as stagnant and bad as it was yesterday, maybe you're looking for anything for a spark, and it didn't. Like you said, you had 5 possessions following where all you needed to do to win the game was to score 7 or get 6 on 2 of those possessions, get 2 field goals, and you win the game.
And actually, I take that back. I misspoke there. The very next play wasn't the interception. It was
the next possession.
The next drive was the interception, but that was the drive. They went all the way down the field into Arizona's territory.
Yeah.
So they had a 5-play, 45-yard drive that took 3 minutes where they're inside the Arizona 30. So they're already in field goal range to retake to extend the lead to 10-6. So again, I get why like you said, had they won the game, this wouldn't even be a conversation. But when you lose the game and your offense is terrible and you don't make plays, you're going to step back from that one play call and everyone's going to scream bloody murder about what are you doing? What are you thinking? What the heck's going on? I got a text message that I can't read on the air when that play happened. I got a text message from a buddy that was words I can't use on the air.
Yeah,
and I'm going, okay, I get it. It's risky. It was probably a bad call by the refs, but like whatever, you gotta take the cards that are dealt to you, and you gotta work with it. The defense did its job, got a stop, still up by a point. There still was a quarter and a half left to go for your team to make a play, and you just didn't. You didn't make plays anywhere.
Yeah, and I'm gonna go back to this again. You know, people are fine, and they want to dismiss things when you win, you know, quote ugly, but when you lose and you still play in that ugly style of football, they have to do something different, and you can't just keep going out and expecting that somehow you're gonna come through at the, you know, at the end, or you're gonna get a couple little plays even though you're getting nothing out of your offense. They've got to make changes this week, otherwise we're looking at a team that could possibly lose to a 3-win Jimmy Garoppolo Niners. And if you do that, I don't think anyone's expecting you to beat Jacksonville again. Jacksonville just took Seattle to the woodshed yesterday.
Yep.
And Blake Bortles is, I can't even believe I'm saying this, Blake Bortles is playing good football at the quarterback position. He's throwing.
How good?
I mean, he's throwing dimes. I mean, I don't think he's thrown an interception in the last 2 games.
that's a long streak for him.
For him, yeah. you got to be better. You got to demand better from your players. And we have to demand better from the coaching staff, I think, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I can't say enough. If we're talking about positives, we are on negatives here. We're talking about positives. We really can't say enough about the job they have done with the defense. And the defense was the big question mark we all thought coming into the season. All they did was get after Blaine Gabbert yesterday, come up with 8 sacks.
Larry Fitzgerald drew a couple penalties, but I don't feel like he had a huge impact on the game.
I thought Logan Ryan played great. I thought Adoree Jackson was good. Cyprian led the team in tackles. Like, I mean, you have guys making plays. This falls on your offense. This falls on Marcus Mariota. This falls on your play caller, and it's got to be better. Or we're gonna have another. And I think I'm really sad to say this, but I really feel like a loss like this puts Titans fans and this Titans nation back into that whole thing. Like, oh yeah, this is just the Titans being the Titans. It's like being a Vanderbilt fan. It's like, you know, Vandy gonna Vandy. Titans are gonna Titan, and you know, they
still first place in the wild card right
they
now.
They have the players. I mean, even though we're looking at like young guys, we talked about this earlier. Young guys at receiver, you know, banged up guys in the offensive line. You still have those two running backs. You still have Marcus Mariota, who went on an insane stretch last season, who has that in him. Like, let's put things together. You're too far into the season right now to be playing this poorly on offense, playing with your first string guys. That's the thing. Yeah. Now, you might see this from a team that's playing a third string quarterback, backup quarterback, you know, a practice squad running back. You might see some struggles like this, but there aren't those excuses for this Titans team.
I mean, my team has its backup quarterback and running back in, and they just went 3-4.
Yeah.
Seven games. But we'll
my team.
We'll leave that. We'll leave that for another day.
Yes,
I have three questions for you, and has nothing to do with the Titans. We're going to take a break from the Titans when we come back. I've got three questions I need to ask you, okay?
Okay.
Three questions.
Three of them.
Three questions. It's very Monty Python of me. We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to The Morning Show here live from the Game Nashville Studios. Presented by Wholesale Link About Juliet on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, Julian Council. I've got to take a break from this Titan stuff, man. I need a minute.
We've been hammering it a little bit.
Is that
here.
Okay?
Yeah. I also love how
we'll
you
get back to it in
you
a second.
You just announced yourself in third person. I mean, I know you're telling everybody.
I think
who
you
it
have
is.
To do that, like every host in the history of
it
radio.
It reminds me of like Karl Malone when he used to do interviews back in the day. Do you remember? Like,
Karl Malone think
Jazz pretty good team.
How else are you supposed to say though that? Like, do I have to make you say my name? I literally think I've been doing radio for like over a decade. I think you have to say I am Braden Gall. Like, I think you have to say that.
Yeah, I think you do too. But you said
I said Braden Gall here.
Braden Gall here. Julian Council, intern of science.
I think I'm okay.
I think you're good. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Okay. I appreciate it.
You called me Jordan earlier.
See,
this
is already a lighter segment than the last seven we've done. So a couple of other things happened over the weekend I'd like to get your thoughts on real quickly here. Mm-hmm. Predators Friday night, 4-3 overtime loss in the shootout. Six shots on P.K. Subban's brother, Malcolm Subban, in net. Really exciting, entertaining hockey game. Just a real fun experience. Obviously didn't get the outcome that the Predators wanted, but the storylines were just ridiculous. James Neal's back in town, scores a goal. Subban on Subban crime there.
Right, right.
Which is awesome. And like his dad's in the crowd wearing the Knights jersey. And it turned out to be a great hockey game. Predators, you know, go up late. And then, of course, Vegas ties it with 40 seconds to go. So obviously you don't want to see the Predators give up that late lead. But just a really entertaining, fun, awesome hockey game. So my question for you, this is my first of three questions.
All right. Three questions. Yep.
And it has nothing to do with the swallow either. I'm not going to ask you about the wing speed velocity. So number one is it good for a sport that an expansion team is really good right out of the gate?
I've changed my mind about this, and I'm going to say it is good for the sport because I think that what you want, and this is, I just make a football analogy because that's where I need to go with this because I'm a football guy, is Roger Goodell would love the entirety of the NFL to be 8-8. Like, that would be.
The AFC will do that for him this
right,
year.
Right. That would be his hope because it's not going to be like baseball where the Yankees are now trading allegedly for Giancarlo Stanton.
And hang on. I'll get to that in a second.
I know you want to talk about that, but I think it's good. I think it's good for the game. I think the more competitive your league is, the better it is for the game in the long run.
Because there's also news that Seattle, the NHL is basically begging Seattle to pony up money to join the NHL.
Can we call them the Sonics? Can we get the Sonics back in Seattle?
Man, I don't know who that's trolling. Is that trolling Seattle fans or is that trolling Oklahoma City fans?
Yeah, I don't know. This is totally an aside. I used to love when the zombie Sonic fans would show up at the Oklahoma City games and they paint their faces like zombies and wear Sonics jerseys.
That's pretty funny.
It's neither here nor there. But, yeah, I think competitive is good. I don't know if you're the owner of the Knights, if you want to start out, because you're setting the bar so high year one, you probably want to not be as good. So
but you're
going to
sell season tickets, though.
You're going to make a lot more money right away.
I
think you'd rather be a little bit mediocre and then build on it than
like barely make the playoffs instead of really good?
Because you don't have a whole lot farther to go up. But I think for the state of the game, it's great. The more competitive the NHL is, it's the better it is for the sport.
I think if Seattle is eventually that 32nd team, I think Seattle and Vegas coming in is a good thing. Question number two. Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman Trophy running away on Saturday night. He's who I voted for. I voted for Baker Mayfield number one. I actually voted Lamar Jackson number two. Bryce Love, I voted Jonathan Taylor number three. A surprise that Bryce Love won every region in number two. I'm a little surprised by that. I thought Lamar Jackson deserved to be in the second spot there. But my question is, do you believe, because Baker Mayfield now has a game against Georgia coming up in the Rose Bowl, I don't know, in a month or so, do you believe in the Heisman Trophy impacting the way he's going to play in the playoff?
I don't really. I think, if anything, we've learned that Baker Mayfield is a supremely self-confident quarterback. I mean, and so I don't think this affects him one way or the other. I mean, that Oklahoma offense has been so impressive all year. I don't see them really coming out and playing flat because the quarterback was honored, you know, with a Heisman Trophy. I do think
more about the banquet circuit you got to go on. You got to do so many obligational things over the course of the next month.
Right.
You gain a few pounds. I'm not even kidding. People say that they go on the Heisman Trophy tour for that month, and they're like 12 pounds overweight.
It's like being
a
freshman in college.
Lots of free dinners. Lots of free dinners.
Get that freshman 20.
A few porterhouses in Baker's future the next 3 weeks.
But look, Baker's game is predicated on his head and his arm. It's not like he's Bryce Love or Lamar Jackson that uses their feet to be playmaker. And Baker moves well enough, but he's not like he's turning into Jarrett Lorenzen. Like we're not worried about him being, you know, the hefty lefty.
The Pillsbury throw boy.
Oh, dude, I love that guy.
The round
guy,
mound
man.
Of touchdown.
What else he got there?
I love that guy. I've been fortunate enough to get to know Jarrett a little bit. He is one of the nicest dudes in the world. He's an awesome guy. So not concerned at all about the Heisman jinx going into the because Alabama, Derrick Henry had won the Heisman. I think they went on to win the national title that year. So
didn't
that
Tebow
happened.
Get the Heisman win the title?
Different years. He won the title in 06 and 08, won the Heisman in 07. Matt Leinart, I think, won the Heisman and then came back and won the national title that year. But there's been a lot of Heisman players that have played poorly in games. My last question, third question for you, Zoe, is the Yankees did acquire Giancarlo Stanton over the weekend. So a team that basically is one of the heaviest hitting teams in all of baseball in a year where we had more home runs than anybody else goes out and gets the NL MVP for basically nothing. Is it good that the Yankees are now the Golden State Warriors of baseball? Is that a good thing for the game, for baseball fans? Is that something you want to see? Because everybody hates the Yankees. That's not a Yankees fan.
Right. And I fall in that.
I hate the Yankees.
Everybody hates the Yankees.
Hate the Yankees.
I do think it's good for baseball, though. And I do think Derek Jeter was a spy. He's got to be.
Conspiracy.
Dude, he just orchestrated the best move for the Yankees have had in quite some time. Think about Aaron Judge and Stanton in the same lineup, batting back-to-back. I think that makes people tune in, and I think it's good for the game.
I was going to say it sells tickets.
It's exactly what it does. Do I think it just creates the even wider chasm between the have and the have-nots in baseball? Absolutely. Does baseball need a salary cap to be competitive? Absolutely. And are they going to do that? Absolutely not. Because they love throwing out money. Look, Bobby Bonilla is still picking up a paycheck.
Stop, that's my team. Stop
that's how
it.
Crazy
Stop it.
Major League Baseball is with Major League Baseball money. I think it's good for the game because just like the Warriors, and look, I'm from Northern California, and so I grew up with like Run TMC. You know, Tim Hardaway, Chris Mullin, that whole team, Mitch Richmond, that whole team was who I grew up with. And so I was kind of pumped to see like the Warriors get who they got because I really don't like LeBron. So that's the flip side.
Wait, just you don't like LeBron?
No.
Why?
Just because.
Why is that shocking to you? Like a lot of people don't like LeBron. Like that's not like a kind of new thing.
Nobody I know. It's just like people on Twitter.
I root for him to lose every game.
You like only know three people.
You like LeBron. Right? You got nothing against LeBron, right, Julian?
I like LeBron, but I'm just like, the fact that you don't know anyone who doesn't like LeBron makes zero sense. Like, the majority of people I know do not like LeBron James.
Nobody in my family has any negative things to say about LeBron. Nobody of my friends do. Nobody I work with.
You probably should branch out then.
Who here in this station hates LeBron James? Like, honestly.
I'm sure 90% of the people
do. Stillman. Does Stillman hate LeBron?
No, he doesn't. No, that's where we've gotten into it on there about.
What I mean, I know what he's saying. I get what Julian's saying. I don't live under a rock. I understand that people. It's because he's been too good for too long, and the chosen one. All this stuff. I get it. But
yeah,
like,
I liked him.
But I don't know any of those people.
Well, I liked him until he left for Miami, and that whole thing became what it was. Because, look, if you want to compare yourself, this is totally off topic. But if you want to compare yourself to Michael Jordan, and that's what always inevitably happens. you can't go out and put yourself on a super team. And I have no problem with Kevin Durant doing that because he never once has been compared to, like, the greatest of all time.
Well, what KD did was worse. I mean, he lost to the team joined the team that
they
beat
were one
him.
Game away from beating him.
Like, the argument is, like, LeBron went to Miami to learn from Pat Riley to become a champion so that he could come back to Cleveland and deliver the championship, which he's done. So at this point, he's got to be exonerated.
That is such a backwards narrative, Julian. When
he left, like, I called him out as much as anyone. I called him a sellout for the longest time. But once he came back to Cleveland and delivered,
KD was totally different in that it was if you can't beat him, I'm going to join him thing. Like, he was literally up 3-1 on that team in the NBA conference finals.
But it doesn't bother me because
I'm going to go join them.
He's not the chosen one. No one is ever saying KD is Michael Jordan. Now, the flip side of that is Michael didn't leave to with the two biggest free agents to join, make a super team. And the backwards narrative there, Julian.
Yeah,
is that,
but like,
no, he was just, but, he was just,
yo,
gambling.
Come on, Luke, the NBA didn't work like that back when Michael played. Well, so I know we keep saying, like, well, Michael didn't do this. Well, guys just didn't do that back then. Guys didn't have the type of relationships that they have with guys nowadays where they're best friends off the court. Yeah. Completely different era of the NBA.
Well, guys wanted to win a championship for themselves, not with their buddies.
And LeBron wasn't betting on all of his basketball games the way Jordan was. So.
True, yeah. Dude, MJ, kidding. How did we get on LeBron?
Totally kidding. This is what happens when you need to take a break from the Titans. You take a break from the Titans.
We end up on LeBron James, Sonics. Yeah, we end up everywhere and nowhere.
Pete Weber coming up next hour. We'll get back into the Titans. Arizona.
Was that the third question?
It was three questions. You didn't really talk about the Yankees.
Oh, it was because I don't like the Yankees. And so my parallel to that is
I don't like
LeBron.
I don't think it's good for baseball that a super team gets formed. I don't think it's good for baseball.
I think it's good for viewership.
It's great for Yankees fans and Yankees ticket sellers. That's who it's great for. What? The title still runs through H-Town, to quote Alex Bregman. Still going to have to beat the Astros. We'll take a break. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall. When we come back, we'll start talking about the ugly Titans again. Yeah. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.